It's a real honor for me to be here with you tonight at the City of Dallas Charter Proposition Education Forum brought to you by the Dallas Regional Chamber. As Cint kind of laid out some of the rules for tonight, I'm going to kind of reiterate some of those rules tonight. I want to start by sharing with you the totality of the notes that the Dallas Regional Chamber gave me ahead of tonight's event. I bring with you the notes. Now, if for those of you listening on KRLD right now, please note that I'm holding up a blank piece of paper. The Dallas Regional Chamber has gone to great lengths to stay impartial throughout this process, and they instead have provided this forum, this opportunity here, so that we can make up our own minds about whether or not we want to support or not support some of these propositions you're going to hear tonight. Now, I want to make sure you understand the difference between the other propositions that are going to be on the ballot and why we're not discussing those tonight, and what these four propositions, how they got to be on a ballot. They're going to be at the very end of what will be a very long ballot. So a lot of voters might give up before they even get to it. But I know those of you who are listening, those of you who are here at Dallas College El Centro, I know that you guys are going to get all the way through that ballot and pay close attention to everything there. Now, the commission, the Charter Review Commission, is a 15-member commission. Each member on the commission is appointed by one of the Dallas City Council members. The commission met 15 times between September of 2023 and April of 2024. They got data, they heard from the city staff, they heard from experts on different matters, they heard from the National Civic League, International City Council Management Association. All of these professionals came in, they opened it up to public comment, they had public contributions to it, and then they recommended to the city council, in fact, they recommended initially 30 different proposals to put on the ballot. Of the 30, 18 will be on the ballot. 18 does not count R, T, S, and U. Those are separate. So how did R, T, S, and U, how did those propositions get on the ballot? The means by which they got on the ballot is just as legal, is just as appropriate as going through the city commission. State law allows for civilians to get together. They have to gather enough signatures, and once they gather enough signatures, the signatures are verified, and then once the signatures are verified, if they have gathered enough signatures, then it can get put on the ballot. And that is exactly what happened with R, T, S, and U. So both the first 18 initiatives and the last four are all legally placed on the ballot. There's no controversy about them being on the ballot. It's just they came through different means. The commission was very, very well vetted over a very, very long period of time, where R, T, S, and U, not so much so. So that is why tonight we're going to be focusing on R, T, S, and U. You might at some point ask yourself, could R, T, S, and U have made it onto the ballot had they gone through the commission review process? You can decide that on your own as to whether or not that would have got on the ballot, but it is something to ponder. Now, we've got several guests that are going to be discussing that here tonight as we get underway. You heard Cint explain the rules. As each of the people that are going to be speaking here tonight, they know we've got a clock here on the middle of the stage. That clock is going to count down. They know how much time they have. Each side, for and against, will make a 5-minute presentation. I will ask questions only if I see fit to clarify something. Otherwise, my job is just to maintain the clock and make sure we stay on time. Thank you again for joining us here tonight. I want to welcome to our stage here at Dallas College El Centro campus our first presenter for tonight, and that's Dr. Lyra Serra, and she's going to be speaking in favor of, she's with Ground Game Texas, and she'll be speaking in favor of Prop R. Now, let me share with you Prop R. For the benefit of our listeners, for the benefit of those of you here in the audience, Prop R deals with marijuana reform. It reads, shall the Dallas City Charter be amended by adding a new section to Chapter 24 that reforms marijuana possession enforcement by prohibiting the Dallas Police Department from making arrests or issuing citations for marijuana possession or considering the odor of marijuana as probable cause for search or seizure, except as part of a violent felony or high priority narcotics felony investigation, making enforcement a Class A and a Class B misdemeanor marijuana possession the Dallas Police Department's lowest enforcement priority, and prohibiting city funds or personnel from being used to test cannabis-related substances to determine whether a substance meets the legal definition of marijuana, except in limited circumstances. We, with every proposition here tonight, have made an offer to people to speak both for and against the proposition, and regrettably, the against the proposition for Proposition R could not fit it in their schedule to join for tonight, so you'll only be hearing from Dr. Lyra Serra, and she is speaking in favor of voting for Prop R. If you please give a round of applause for Dr. Serra.
Well, good evening. Again, I'm Dr. Serra, and I am a cannabis medicine specialist. Yes, that actually exists. I prescribe medical marijuana through the Texas Compassionate Use Program for eligible patients to relieve their symptoms of pain or anxiety when no other medications are working. So let's talk about Proposition R and why it's important. As you heard, it decriminalizes possession of marijuana up to 4 ounces because a Class A misdemeanor of possession of 2 to 4 ounces of marijuana means possible jail time of up to a year and a fine up to $4,000. And also, a Class B misdemeanor of less than 2 ounces can also incur jail time and a fine. It also is a justice issue because back in 2022, a study found here in Dallas that Black residents made up the majority of arrests of the Class B misdemeanor. I want to tell you about why someone would need 4 ounces of marijuana. I think that's probably a logical question. I have a patient who currently goes to Colorado to buy marijuana plant material, and because he uses 2.5 grams a day, and he can only buy 4 ounces, because if he buys more than 4 ounces, it is a felony if he is caught in possession of more than 4 ounces. He needs this medication because he has PTSD as a combat veteran. He has panic attacks where he needs immediate release from inhaled marijuana, also known as cannabis. And this is inhaled not by smoking like people are used to seeing in movies. This is done by means of a medical vaporizer that heats but does not burn the plant material. So patients need this. The other important, very important topic is opioid reduction. Marijuana is being used to reduce opioid dependence, abuse, and potential overdose. And in fact, states that have marijuana, medical marijuana laws, have seen a reduction in opioid overdose fatalities. And guess what? Marijuana does not affect the breathing center in the brain. So there has literally never been a reported marijuana overdose that led to a fatality in cases where the marijuana was the only substance utilized. It has never caused a fatality. So my question is then, would you actually arrest one of my cancer patients for possession of 4 ounces of marijuana when my cancer patients are calling me asking for marijuana because they're scared to use their opioids? They're scared they may die from an accidental overdose. And that is why it's very important. So I just want to plead with you to please vote for Proposition R. It is a medical issue, not just a criminal justice issue. It is a medical issue that this be decriminalized. I want to thank you so much for your time.
I do have a question for Dr. Serra. For those of us that are bad at drug math, What is 4 ounces? Let's say I've got a sandwich bag. Is that 4 ounces?
A gallon bag.
A gallon bag.
But that would be including the plant material that you buy, includes stems, includes all of this material that doesn't contain medicine.
Okay.
And so you have to throw that out. And by the time you throw that out, you have half of the amount that you started with.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Now, for the remaining part of our program, we'll only have two speakers that'll be speaking both on the against side and the for side of the propositions. So please welcome up here to our stage here at Dallas College El Centro campus, Pete Morocco. Pete is the executive director of Dallas Hero. And Tom Leppert. Tom is the former mayor of Dallas. He was the mayor in 2007 to 2011. Mayor Leppert, if you'd come up here too, please. We're going to move on now to Proposition S. I'm going to share with you Proposition S. This is where these are a little bit more tricky, and I'm so glad to have these experts here to be able to explain all this to us. Proposition S. This deals with granting standing to residents and waiving governmental immunity. Shall the Dallas City Charter be amended by adding a new chapter that grants standing to any resident of Dallas to bring a lawsuit against the city to require the city to comply with provisions of the city charter, city ordinances, and state law, entitles claimants to seek declaratory and injunctive relief against the city and recover costs and reasonable attorney's fees, and waives the city's governmental immunity from suit and liability and claims brought under this amendment. That's it. I know you guys all completely understood. And imagine those that don't have the benefit of this program tonight just reading that on a ballot and trying to figure out what in the world that means. So here to present the argument in favor of passing this is Pete Morocco. He's the executive director of Dallas Hero. Pete.
So thank you, everyone. You want a microphone? Is that you working? Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. I appreciate you taking a sincere interest in what we're talking about. It's very serious, and I want to start off by talking about something very serious that happened here. We're on hallowed ground. This is the site of one of Dallas's deadliest shootings in history of police officers. We need to think about the seriousness and severity of what we're talking about, and that everything we're talking about in these three amendments really comes down to public safety. It's not just about getting more police officers. It's about how you hold the city accountable to that. And it's about how you get laws enforced that the city is not enforcing. So we feel like it's very important to just draw attention to that this is a very serious issue. This is not just theory. It's not something personal. That is, we've had a lot of information that's put out there as far as it being some type of specific vendetta or something like that. It has nothing to do with that. This is a very serious issue, and we want to address it with tools that the people will have to address it. So with that, Proposition S, this is a suite of propositions that is here because the citizens of Dallas were not satisfied, were not happy with the way that the city was performing. And Proposition S reflects that we want to see the laws enforced. And so I'm going to start with one that really is the reason why we're here. So in 1988, and it's still law today, ordinance number 19983 was introduced. And I'm going to read that to you. It says the city manager will increase the total number of police officers serving the city by at least 150 officers per each year for the next 4 years thereafter, will maintain a ratio of at least 3 officers per 1,000 citizens to properly serve the needs of the city, but reserves the flexibility to meet those service requirements by using new policies and programs. So, I just read that because what we're talking about is currently law. We are supposed to maintain a ratio of 3 officers to every 1,000 citizens. Now, it's been achieved. It's been achieved at the rate and the pace that we're talking about. And I'm actually happy to be sitting next to one of the mayors who actually did achieve it at exactly the rate, the pace, and the ratio that we're talking about. I don't think he would say that he's extreme, right? Because he actually did what we're talking about. And so I want to give him that compliment. But we've also had a lot of political changes that have happened through the years. We've had political whims. We've had attacks on police. We've had attacks on the policy of what police do. We don't even have consensus across the city council right now on number one, whether or not police are a good thing. We have several members of city council who have actively recently marched to defund the police. I don't think that's something Tom Leppert would do. I also want to remind you something, that the solutions that we're talking about tonight are not something between me and Tom. You are probably, by the end of this session, you're probably going to like Tom better. I am not a trained, politician or a debater. And I say that with all sincerity, because just remember that what we are not talking about is between me and Tom. What we are talking about is a solution and no solution. That's what we're talking about tonight. So Proposition S proposes that a citizen, a resident of Dallas, will have standing when the city violates a law, violates the charter, violates the laws of Texas, will have standing to sue for enforcement of those laws. And I want to clarify exactly how it says this is going to happen, because again, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's stories online. Some of the people that are part of the opposition have said that every time your trash is delivered late, somebody's going to sue. Somebody's going to be trying to sue for money damages. Let me clarify very clearly. This does not include money damages. It says right here, for those of you who picked up a pack, it says right here in subsection 1, declaratory and injunctive relief, right there. So what we're looking for is if the city council is not doing what they are required to do, this simply enforces the law. Again, no money damages. This is the whole thing. It's just one paragraph here. This is not complicated to read. I also want to make sure that we lay out one other key portion of this, is the 60-day notice requirement. If the city council is in violation of the law, then they have the ability to cure it within 60 days. You have to give notice before you can even start a process. So I just want to be very clear about this. This is a fair way for the citizens of Dallas to hold their leaders accountable to enforcement of the law.
Eight, that was exactly 5 minutes. That was great. Thank you. Mayor Leppert, your reply, please.
Pete, thank you very much, and I appreciate both the Dallas Regional Chamber and KLD participating in this effort. I'm in a unique position because I don't have a dog in the fight, but I was in a position as mayor of this city, having made real progress on public safety, on issues associated with economic development, and also in terms of fiscal responsibility, to understand what the ramifications of some of these issues are. I want to tell you tonight, we are not debating accountability or the importance of public safety and additional police officers. We agree with that. There is no question about that. However, I've run large companies in 5 different industries, and I can tell you there's a big difference between an idea and a solution. Solutions can be difficult, gritty, and very complex at some times. And if you don't get them right, the outcome can be worse than the problem. That's what we're here to talk about today. It's also important that you understand that all living mayors, all former city managers, the city council, and representatives of groups in this room, groups that are interested in the strength and prosperity of Dallas, downtown Dallas, the North Dallas Chamber, and other organizations, including funds that focus on specific industries like real estate, they are all in a position of saying no on these. So you've got to ask yourself the question why, especially when someone that's on the Republican side and a conservative like Tom Leppert and a liberal on the left side like Laura Miller, both are in the same position. And of all of the different amendments, the most egregious of all is S. And let's look at why. Now, to do it, let's look at actually the wording of it. I'm going to point out 3 different things. One, it says any citizen. It doesn't say any reasonable citizen. It doesn't say any citizen with a legitimate reason. It says any citizen. So unlike law out of 50 nations, and we've seen for 200 years, you do not have to have standing. You do not have to be a grieved person. You do not have to be impacted by damages or anything else that somebody's doing. Any citizen can bring a lawsuit. Secondly, a lawsuit. It can be any lawsuit. It can be any law. Large, significant, insignificant, it doesn't make any difference. Any citizen can pick any piece and file a lawsuit. And number three, look at the wordings. Attorney's fees. Reasonable attorney fees. All of you in professional services understand very clearly that those include profits. I'll tell you, when Thomas G. Henry looks at this, he's salivating. It's got three important implications. Number one, it takes decision making and throws it into the courts. And by the way, Alan, this is Dallas County. You know who the judges are. Those are the judges that you're going against right now. Those are not the judges that you want to determine issues here in Dallas, a city that's growing and continues to prosper. Number two, the employees. This has the potential, and I think it will, bring the city to a standstill, a standstill. Employees won't know where to go. Their issues will be in front of the courts, depositions, etc. Any citizen can bring any lawsuit. And finally, the cost. All of these lawsuits are going to have to be litigated. That means more lawyers at the city level. It means more time, more effort, and more of your taxpayer money. But let's look at a real situation. Dallas City Code 5A102 says the city needs to promote health, safety, morals, and general welfare of the city and lists broad objectives such as providing adequate light and air, preventing the overcrowding of land, and promoting the character of areas of the city. There is no development project, no development project in this city that is not subject to lawsuit under that. Any person, an aggrieved person, a special interest group, it doesn't make any difference. They can bring a lawsuit. And with it, it brings everything to a halt. So for all of you that are in business, ask a couple of questions. How do we entice companies to move here when they know their building permits, their entitlements can be held up? How do we encourage people to make investments here when there's no certainty? Businesses want certainty. There is no certainty under this. Keep in mind, good intentions.
Mayor Leppert, your time is up.
Good intentions result in bad outcomes.
Thank you very much, sir. You guys can applaud. All right, we're going to move on now to Proposition T. Proposition T reads, shall Chapter 6 of the Dallas City Charter be amended by adding a new section compelling the city to conduct the city commissioned community survey on an annual basis to be completed by a minimum of 1,400 Dallas residents on their satisfaction on quality of life issues, the results of which will result in the city manager earning additional performance compensation between 0% and 100% of the city manager's annual base salary, or the termination of the city manager. To present the argument in favor of voting for this, the executive director of Dallas Hero, Pete Morocco.
Thank you. So before I go, I'm going to save most of my rebuttal for the end and make final remarks, but there is one point I'm going to bring up right now. One of the former living mayors who I've spoken with many times today has asked you to please stop saying every former living mayor supports this, because she does not. So I encourage you to do your research, because you guys pushed out all kinds of material that says every former living mayor supports you. They do not. And it's funny to me that in all you have not even gotten on Google to see which former mayors are still living. So all due respect,
would it be fair to say all elected former mayors?
You guys are saying all mayors. If you're going to start playing politics with former mayors, we can have that discussion.
Okay. Perhaps I should have said all elected. I agree.
Well, you guys are just repeating stuff that other people are saying that's not true. So I just want to put that out there. So, first of all, I don't think there is a single person in the business community that expects their CEO to show up to work with no expectation of results. I imagine there's probably a few people in this audience. I know one who's definitely a CEO of a large organization. I cannot imagine asking any CEO to go in and do their job and not have a key performance indicator, not have an objective that they have to achieve at the very beginning. Well, fortunately, Dallas already has a standard for what this is going to be. We have an existing survey that the city already uses. Many of the mayors that we're talking about have already used this survey. Mike Rawlings used this survey. It currently requires a minimum of 1,400 people. That's 100 per district. Now, we didn't make up that number, even though Mike Rawlings and others have said we did. That's the existing survey that they already have, and it looks at five key areas. Those key areas are, number one, the top priority to all Dallas residents, crime, addressing public safety. Two, streets and infrastructure. Three, homelessness. Four, litter. And five, aggressive panhandling. These are consistently the top five issues that matter to the residents of Dallas. We need to take it very seriously that our chief executive is held accountable for results. I can't imagine anywhere else in the country where a chief executive is not held accountable for results. Otherwise, you end up with a city manager that makes more than the president of the United States for consistently failing year after year after year. This is a very reasonable way of looking at performance. It's performance-based compensation. This is exactly how any chief executive officer should be judged. And I want to point this out. So the survey, again, pointing out some of the misinformation that's out there, we certainly do not hope that only 1,400 people vote on this and weigh in on this survey. Right here in Section 1, it puts this survey on the city council. The city council gets to shape the survey however they want. They can raise that bar as high as they want. They can make it 14,000. They can make it 140,000. We're saying you can't take it any further below the existing standard that we have right now. So I just want to point that out. That's important. Another important thing to point out is right here. On the third page, for those of you who've got one of our packs, it's on page 6. If you look at section 3, subsection C, then you will see that it says after 18 months in the job on January 1st. So that means at a minimum, say Kim Tolbert was appointed in January as the city manager. The first time this is even going to come up is 2027. That means she's got a minimum of at least 2 years to show results and something to be measured on. And then after the results come back, if she's succeeding across the board, she doesn't have anything to worry about. So the bottom line is, it is not wrong for citizens to say, we expect results. Now, one of the counterarguments that we've heard from plenty of people, and I sat with Mayor Johnson, I heard his feelings about this, but a lot of people talk about the right way to do with this would be to have a strong mayor policy versus the weak mayor structure. And what this means is that the city council would not hire a city manager, that the chief executive would actually be the mayor, and that that person would be directly accountable to the people. That's an argument that can be had, but at the bottom line is, we don't have an accountability metric for our chief executive to deliver results. That's all this is saying. And nearly 60,000 people signed this one alone. That's a big deal. And so when we get a lot of pushback from people on the opposition that say that they don't want this to come from the citizens, you peasants, you stay in your lane, right? This is the kind of pushback that we've gotten. The bottom line is, we know that this is something that citizens want.
Thank you very much. Mayor Leppert, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. We all want accountability. There is no question about that. We want accountability. But again, good intentions can lead to very bad outcomes. This is a survey of 1,400 people. To give you a sense, that's 0.1% of the population. 0.1% of the population. This is trying to develop a compensation program on one page. I can tell you, I've written a lot of corporate compensation programs for CEOs. None of those were one page. And the reason is, it doesn't take into consideration issues that it needs to. If you look at the actual wording of how this plays out, it's in these five different areas that Pete mentioned. And then in each of the areas, there's a hit at 30% of how much and how it plays on if that becomes a firing or if it becomes additional compensation. So let's say in three of those areas, I end up getting a 25% rating in each of those three areas. Pete, though, gets 35%, just in three areas. The difference to that is one of us gets fired, one of us gets 100%. There's only a 10% difference. Now, I can also tell you that Pete appropriately focused on the 18 months. New manager comes in, they've got 18 months. Well, nobody's had more turnarounds corporately in this room than I have. And I can tell you, if you run into a situation where you have to come in and you have to make significant changes to see improvement, the first thing that happens, it is always negative when you make a change. Secondly, it always takes longer than you anticipate on the front end. And third is, even though the change has been made, it takes time to change the perception. To change the perception among the folks that are, in this case, going to make the judgments. So you're searching for a new city manager. That city manager, you want to be strong and highly qualified. That city manager looks and says, I've got to make lots of changes. I've got to make significant changes. If I don't do it in 18 months, I'm out. According to the perception of people who are a long ways from understanding the changes that actually have to be made. And by the way, it's not me. What happens if the mayor doesn't go along? What happens if the city council doesn't go along? Any of those factors means I'm gone in 18 months. We are looking for a new city manager now. I can tell you the city managers that I've talked to, they would never touch this job under these circumstances. They simply wouldn't touch it. It simply doesn't work. We all want accountability, but this is not the way to get it. And importantly, what happens is you take the responsibility and the accountability of where it should be at the mayor and the council, and you've given them a free ride because they no longer have to be responsible for the city manager and the performance of the departments within the city. Now it's pushed off. They lose accountability. So while we want accountability, what this really does is you lose accountability. But let me give you a personal perspective on where this really falls down. And that is, it takes a position that has been non-political and politicized it. I met with my city manager most days at least five times in her office or in mine. I had trust in her because I knew that her focus was on the city, and it was on the city now and long term. It wasn't changing the budget to put more advertising in to change the perception of 1,400 people so that she could get a higher salary. It wasn't making short-term decisions to put flowers on a street in North Dallas when we knew the long-term issue was providing more water so this city could continue to grow. That's the implications. You lose the focus and the trust that the mayor has to have in the city manager and the council has to have in the city manager. That's the problem. Good intentions, but bad outcomes.
Thank you, Mayor. If you are just joining us, we are at the Dallas College El Centro campus here on News Radio 1080 KRLD. This is our City of Dallas Charter Propositions Education Forum, sponsored by the Dallas Regional Chamber. I'm Joe Kelly from News Radio 1080 KRLD. It is now time for our final proposition, that is Proposition U. And Proposition U deals with police and fire funding appropriation. And it reads, shall Chapter 11 of Dallas City Charter be amended by adding a new section compelling City Council to appropriate no less than 50% of annual revenue that exceeds the total annual revenue of the previous year to fund the Dallas Police and Fire Pension, with any monies remaining of that 50% to be appropriated to increasing the starting compensation of officers of the Dallas Police Department and to increase the number of police officers to a minimum of 4,000 and to maintain that ratio of officers officers to the City of Dallas population as of the date of passage of this amendment. Here to give the argument in favor of that, once again, is the Executive Director of Dallas Hero, Pete Morocco.
Thank you. So this proposition, the very last proposition on the ballot, is really what it all comes down to. The bottom line is we need more police. The choice here in Dallas is not whether you want their plan or our plan. The choice is, do you want to get to the minimum level of staffing in a plan or no? Or do you want the city to continue disregarding the law, fluctuating with every political whim that gets out there? Three or four city council members that are out there protesting against the police, others that are lying about police levels, others that are out there using alarmist language saying that if you get to the minimal adequate staffing level, that will create a police state. So I want to put this in perspective of where some other major cities are. First of all, the city of Washington, D.C. has 5.1 officers per 1,000 citizens. Dallas has 2.2. Chicago, San Francisco, Baltimore, all of these cities, Los Angeles, we just dipped below Los Angeles, and we're about to dip below Austin. This is serious, people. Getting back to three officers to 1,000 citizens is the law. It is a law that has been disregarded since Mr. Leppert was in office. This is not acceptable. Now, I like Tom. I like his ideas. I like the fact that he actually got this done. But Tom is not the mayor anymore. Tom does not have 8 city council members that are going to vote with him. Mayor Johnson does not even have 4. You are not going to get more officers next year unless you take action, period. That's the choice before you today. And so when you look at the option before you, the choice is, do you want more officers? Yes. Or do you not want more officers? No. This affects your response time. It affects the police's ability to take care of you. There is no solution on the other side of this table. There is no better way to do this. There is no how. First, look at the amendment. The amendment itself only sets a safety net. It sets a floor. This does not impact the meet and confer contract that the city has with the police. This does not impact the discussions and negotiations that the police and the city are going to have between each other to get to that number. It doesn't impact any of that. It doesn't hamper their ability to get it done. And when they use excuses where they say it's not the what, it's the how, that is, again, an unspecific argument where they have not proposed a how. They have not told us how they are going to get there. There is no one on city council that is here tonight that I've seen. If there is, please raise your hand. I don't want to disrespect you. They are not here. They do not have a plan. They do not want this. If you want more police, if you want us to get to the minimum level of staffing, then you need to vote for Proposition U. This is by far the most important question you will be asked on your ballot, from president down to Proposition U. Nothing will impact your life more than having adequate public safety. Nothing. It is the number one priority to citizens, and so we cannot take it lightly. I want to point out a few other things. Chief Garcia has frequently been misquoted here, and I'm not going to quote him. You can go back to the tapes yourself and look at August 14th and August 7th and see what he said during the briefings. But the opposition continues to say things that he did not say. We don't appreciate that. I also want to point out the trauma that the current staffing levels have on our police officers. It's not just about us. We have to maintain an adequate police force. If you were a Dallas police officer and you just graduated the police academy, and you could make $12,000 more by going to Plano, and instead, in Dallas, you're only responding to priority one calls, murders, shootings, stabbings, and you're showing up late. This affects people in different parts of Dallas differently. If you're in South Dallas and you have a murder, shooting, or stabbing, you're not going to get a response in 15 minutes. If you are in other parts of Dallas, you might be lucky enough to get one. The worst standard is 8 minutes. We should be below 4. Think about Coppell. It's going to be 2 minutes or less. But the other, if you have random gunfire, you're looking at 6 hours. If you have violence with a risk of loss of life, a priority two call, you're looking at 2 hours minimum for a response. This is simply not adequate.
You have all seen the price that we are paying for complete property crime that goes with total amnesty. We do not have the department resources to respond to it. We must change and we must take action now. Thank you.
Mayor Leppert, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. I absolutely support the police and want to add more police officers. And let's be crystal clear. There is no mayor in the last 75 years in any city of any size that grew their police force any more than I did. During that time, we elevated a gentleman named David Brown, one of the most respected individuals, police chiefs. He's also against this proposition. Why would you have a mayor who put more police and grew that police department more than any other city in 75 years, and the police chief at that time who saw crime go down and finally saw Dallas become not the number one crime city in the nation? It's very simple. Because this proposition lacks in both substance and form. Why would I say that? Well, first of all, the money doesn't go for police officers initially. It goes for pension funds. Now, we ended up with a big pension fund, but it had nothing to do with the amount of money the city put into it. It was because of mismanagement at the board level and management level. But under this proposition, you may be the taxpayer that has to put more money into this thing, even though it's the board that needs to be held accountable for the performance of that portfolio and the amount of money that goes into it. Secondly, in terms of the number of police officers, again, I want to see more police officers. But this isn't the way to do it. Because fighting crime is more than just police officers. We were successful in reducing crime, not just because of police officers, but because we knew enough to put money where it needed to go. In addition to police, it needed to be going to lighting. It needed to be put in community engagement. It needed to be put in all the areas of the city that make this a more livable place and send signals that crime is not favored. In the Lancaster corridor, we reduced crime by 26%. But it was because of community engagement. It was because of community prosecutors. And it was because of the expenditures that were put into the city and infrastructure. That made a difference, and David Brown will tell you that. It takes both. To go ahead and put an amendment that becomes constitutional law that doesn't change, that provides no flexibility in the way we spend money, takes all the accountability away from the mayor and the city council of where money should go to fight crime and do it best. We want more police officers, we absolutely do. But then we also have to turn attention to how we bring those police officers. You see on there, it doesn't talk about the standards and it doesn't talk about the training. Now, all of you that run businesses, think of this for a moment. So what I'm going to tell you is you have to hire people. They may not make your standards and you may not be able to train them the way you want to. Is that a recipe for success? Of course it's not. We need to make sure that when we hire those police officers, we're hiring the best quality that we can, and we need to make sure that we train them in the way that we can. And I'll give you two examples of how important that is. First of all, when you bring in officers that don't meet the standards, you're going to ask for a problem. And second of all, the training becomes absolutely critical. And it's not the training going through the academy. It's the on-the-job training. It's having that senior officer, that 5 to 10 year officer, that really educates a young officer on how you operate a police department and how you operate on the streets. It's kind of that on-the-job training. Now, all of you understand in your businesses that if you brought in individuals that don't meet the standards and aren't trained properly, the ramifications of that. Well, let me leave you with this. In life, you can go along with substandard and a lot of jobs. You can't with airline pilots, doctors, or your police officers. through an untrained substandard officer in a dark alley with kids around and with guns. That's not the way you fight crime. Good intentions, bad outcomes, sometimes tragic outcomes.
Mayor Leppert, thank you. We're not quite to the end of our program here tonight. Don't worry, we don't have dancers or anything else coming out like that, but we will hear closing arguments from both of the gentlemen up here in just a moment. You're listening to News Radio 1080 KRLD. You're listening to the Dallas Regional Chamber's presentation of the City of Dallas Charter Propositions Education Forum. We're at the Dallas College El Centro campus. We're now going to hear closing arguments from both of our presenters as Mr. Morocco has gone first with all of the propositions. Mayor Leppert is going to go first with his closing argument.
Again, thank you for participating here and to the Dallas Regional Chamber for sponsoring this. We all want accountability in all of our governments and in a safe city. And I can understand the frustrations. The frustrations stand there. I want to see changes made at City Hall as much as all of you do. But I can tell you, playing into fears as the opposition does, that's not going to solve the problems that we have. And it doesn't give us the solutions that are going to move this city forward. I also, with all the challenges that we have, know the possibilities and opportunities. If you go any place in this nation, I can tell you today in a business community, they talk about Dallas. Dallas is the economic center of this nation today. And with all the frustrations and challenges, keep in mind that a recent survey, Dallas voted by both its residents and tourists as the safest city in America. And that survey that Pete talked about, look at that survey, because on a relative basis, Dallas actually came out very well relative to other major cities. We've got a lot to be proud of, and we need to move forward on all of these. The changes that are proposed to our charter, and again, they're constitutional. They're not going to be changed by a simple vote of the city council. They're not going to be changed by a mayor waving his hands. These are changes that are going to be locked in and we are going to live with long, long in the future. Gibson Dunn, one of the largest law firms, looked at this idea of waiving standing and waiving sovereign immunity. No place in the nation. No place in the nation, no city government, no state government has ever moved to waive standing and sovereign immunity for good reasons. Others have tried to mandate spending too. California's tried to do it. How has that turned out? Not particularly well. And I find it almost comical that as we're talking about public safety, the biggest tenet of the defund police movement was to eliminate immunity for the police department. But that's what we're doing. We need to push our city forward. But these are amendments that have never been tested before. So my question to you is very simple. Do you want to be at the experiment? Do you want your businesses and your future prospects to be a guinea pig? Good intentions can produce very bad outcomes.
Mayor Leppert, thank you. Now the executive director of Dallas Hero, Pete Morocco, you've got 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor Leppert, for presenting the best argument that the opposition has. And thank you for participating in this. I want to start by identifying the fact that we have the best case that they've made, and I still don't have many details. I've been to a lot of political fundraisers and a lot of political events where I feel like I just got a motivation speak, but I didn't get any details about how they're going to solve any problems, and I didn't get a guarantee that the people that we're left with at the end of that are going to work well with others, that they're going to be competent, that they're going to maintain their integrity, and they're going to get anything done The reason we are here is because of more than 15 years of consistent failure. This group of opposition, it has more than three decades of cumulative failure on its record. There is a reason we are here making these requirements put on the ballot. Do you like choices? I ask you, do you like choices? Well, I want to start with how you got a choice in this race. The only reason you have a choice in this race is because of a lawsuit. Our lawsuit was against the city council, who tried to put three duplicitous measures on the ballot to neuter every choice we're giving you. We took that to the Supreme Court of Texas, and the Supreme Court of Texas found that they violated the law. The people that he wants to entrust the next solution to blindly, with no plan for how it's going to happen, violated the law, and the Supreme Court found, quote, that they deliberately intended to mislead and confuse voters. That is not a small thing. Don't forget that the people he wants to entrust your future to are the ones who deliberately intended to mislead and confuse voters. That is not my opinion. That is the law of Texas. That is the city council that is in power right now. I want to highlight a few other points that he made specifically that were not correct. First of all, he specified during Proposition S that there was that you didn't have to have any harm. They've made it sound like these are capricious lawsuits that could happen. If you look, it says very specifically you must have individualized harm to have standing. You have to have given notice to the city and given them an opportunity to cure it. And at the end of the day, the best thing you can get is enforcement of the law. Who does not want enforcement of the law by the very people who are making our laws? It does not include a gentleman that I saw this weekend. Maybe some of you saw it on the news. He had $350,000 of damage to his home because of a broken water main. I feel for that man, and I frankly feel like the city should pay for it. But guess what? That's not covered by this. He's not going to get that money. While I'm talking about that, about things that aren't going to change, there's been a bunch of alarmist language. It's going to blow up the budget, hand grenade at City Hall, chocolate-covered rat poison. I have not heard any substance out of the opposition. And instead, I've just heard name-calling and colloquialisms. And at the end of the day, between 2011 and 2018, right after Mayor Leppert left to run for Senate, our next mayor was later put in jail. And we lost 800 police officers, and we lost billions of dollars in the pension fund and bad investments. Just forget about it, he says. Poor execution. You should not take part in your government. You should not take part in direct democracy. Trust politicians. And at the end of the day, the only reason the opposition has given anybody to trust what they're saying is trust politicians. Go back to sleep. So I'm going to call out a few more pieces of this. First of all, this stuff about the survey giving results that are not true because you're only going to have 0.1%. I just outlined for you that it could be at 14,000 or 140,000, and the city council themselves would be in control of the survey itself, what it included. So that's a completely ridiculous argument to make. Also, we don't need exhausted police officers. I want you to think about what it's like, what kind of decisions a police officer is going to make if they spend 14 to 16 hours on a shift. Right now, we have a $5 billion budget. I don't care what numbers they're quoting. There's a lot of inaccurate numbers they're pushing out, like 60% of the budget. It is not true. If I held up a $100 bill right now, the amount of money we're talking about for the additional officers we're talking about is about four or five quarters. Four or five quarters out of $100. We are talking about 1% is the amount of increase that we need. And we're not even talking about an increase. We are talking about new revenue only that has not been already allocated. I want to say that again, new revenue only. Those of you who are big fans of our current social programs, Counting Trees, all of the wonderful programs that are out there, all of those programs that are earmarked stay exactly where they are and they are not touched. We are saying that the number one priority for the people of Dallas will be to solve our police pension crisis. That is going to take a long time, and we are never going to get through it with political whims from one city council to the next. We need a durable plan that is going to last for decades, and we need to get our police force back above a safety net so we're not scrimping and scriving and asking police officers to work 14 to 16 hour shifts. It simply is not tenable. So I appreciate your time tonight. I'm happy to take anybody's questions after this. I want to make sure that everybody understands that this is all being done with good faith and that we want your vote on November 5th for propositions S, T, and U. Thank you.
It is exciting, is it not, to hear a couple of passionate gentlemen making a good argument in favor of making our city a better place. So once again, a big round of applause for Pete Morocco and Tom Leppert. Thank you. The last person you're going to hear from tonight is one of my favorites. Please give a big round of applause for Dale Petrosky from the Dallas Regional Chamber.
Good evening, everyone. And Dr. Sierra, thank you for your presentation, Pete, for yours, and Tom, for yours. I thought it was a great public service tonight to be able to sit here and listen to everybody and really get more informed about these issues. Joe, thank you for moderating. You did a great job. Thanks for KRLD for helping share valuable information with voters across the city. As Cint said at the start, everyone here cares deeply about the future of our city and our region. You could hear that today. They care about the people who live here, the people who work here, the people who do business here. And I'd be surprised if anyone in this room doesn't want a safe and just community. One with enough police officers to protect us, a government that follows the laws that govern them, and a city that delivers basic services well. We all want those things. It'll be up to the voters to decide how best to achieve these goals that we all agree on. And I hope this forum has helped clarify your thinking on the way forward. A reminder that these propositions are all way at the bottom of the ballot, a long ballot. So stick with it, make your vote count on these important issues. And I think the DRC can help you a little bit because we have a voter engagement toolkit on our website that allows you to see your exact polling location and what your individual ballot will look like depending on where you live. And I hope you use that toolkit to be even more prepared when you go in to vote. Big thanks to Dallas College for letting us use this space for this forum. Really appreciate it. Thank you again for being here and have a great evening.